Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today, we are pleased on the HR Power Hour to have the first of our four-part series with in-depth interviews of the four gubernatorial candidates of the great state of Maine. These interviews have been designed to be a positive conversation with the candidates, where we focus on real issues and concerns that business leaders, HR professionals, and employees care about today. I have some questions that I have created, but I have also asked some business leaders and show listeners their thoughts and built questions. After this interview, I will interview the additional candidates and I will ask them the basic questions. They may or may not get follow-up questions based on their answers, and not all questions may be asked of each candidate based on answers or time. Please note the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the candidates on this show are those of the candidate and not necessarily those of the HR Power Hour radio show, its ownership, sponsors, or Atlantic Coast Radio. The content of this show has not been approved, and each candidate is solely responsible for his or her content. Their appearance does not constitute an endorsement. Today, I, David Chulo, your host of the HR Power Hour, have the pleasure of speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as an independent candidate for the great state of Maine in 2018. According to his website, caronforgovernor.com, Alan Caron founded Grow Smart Maine and Envision Maine, where he convened hundreds of Maine's best thinkers and doers from across the political spectrum to focus on the future, on common ground and common purpose. He has also co-authored two books, Reinventing Maine Government and Maine's Next Economy. He has graciously taken some time out of his busy schedule to be with us today, and I am truly looking forward to discussing his vision for the next 4 years. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
No, I'm glad to have you. Came in on your bus.
Oh, yeah, on the 32-foot magic motorhome.
We're traveling
the whole state in this thing and just having a ball.
That's awesome. And how many counties, towns are you planning to go to?
We're going to go to 450 towns. We've been to 14 counties already. So we got just a few less. But it's a good way to travel around and meet people. And it's amazing how many people I run into who say, well, I saw you in your RV.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the RV is like it's a billboard.
It's a moving billboard.
In
a state that doesn't allow billboards, you can still find a way to do it.
I love that. That's great. All right. Well, you know, let's start off with an easy question, I like to say. What is the personal reason you're running for governor?
I think we can do better. I think Maine has enormous potential now in the 21st century to build the kind of economy we need to flourish here. And, you know, I'm waiting around. I've had my own business for over 30 years, and I have been consulting with top CEOs in businesses across the state. I see something stirring in this state with a lot of potential, and I want to see it grow. I've been advising political candidates and elected officials for years and years, and I am tired of waiting for stuff to get done.
So you finally decided to make the mark.
Yeah, sitting on a couch a year ago, and I realized you can't just sit on the couch all the time. You got to get up and you got to do stuff. Now, I've never run for office. I never really thought of running for office until last year. And it just seems to me like we're moving in the wrong direction. And we've gotten full of anger and vitriol and hyper-partisanship, and I said we can do better. And I'm trying to draw upon the main people that I know who are not represented by this politics. I mean, we're better than that. So something in my head said, you, get off the couch. Go do something. I am largely funding this campaign myself, but I don't owe anybody in this campaign, and I will never in the course of this campaign say negative things about any of the candidates. So, you know, you have to model the change you want to see. Now, that means I don't have all the money and all the political advantages and all the organization that the two parties have, so be it. But I think people in Maine are ready for a big change.
What in your background, or what have you done specifically? I know you'd had the two organizations that you founded, Grow Smart Maine and Envision Maine. Tell me what it is in your background that you've done maybe with your life that makes you feel you're qualified to run as a chief executive officer.
Well, a couple of things. I'm going to go back a little bit. So I grew up in the south end of Waterville in a blue-collar family, Franco-American, poverty, broken family, alcoholic father. I dropped out of school in the ninth grade, went to work with my hands, loading tractor-trailer trucks and ending up doing construction, worked in the mill at Edwards. So I have seen the hardest hit part of the economy in Maine over the last 30 or 40 years, which is mill workers and farmers. So I have an understanding of what the other Maine is like. So we'll begin there. I have built two businesses. The first one didn't know the first thing I was doing, and it actually did too well, too fast. It grew too fast, and I learned some good lessons from it. Second one I've had for over 30 years, as I said, I've advised leaders all across the state. And so I think that experience of doing a business has been helpful. I'm not the only one in this race who's done a business. Mine was not as prominent as Sean Moody's is, but it's been very successful. And it's got me involved in every critical issue facing Maine. When at some time, I've worked on that issue. I've written two books about the Maine economy, one Reinventing Maine Government in 2010, which the current governor embraced and liked and actually asked me to be on his transition team, which I agreed to do for a couple of months as a volunteer. And then 2 years ago, I co-authored something called Maine's Next Economy, which is really what my passion is. How do we get from where we are, where we've been, to where we're going? Add to that, you mentioned Envision Maine. The work of this group, Envision Maine, has been to bring people together. Big groups, 200, 300 people all across the state, and get them to focus on the positive. You know, we spend all our time focusing on the negative and what we disagree on, and we usually talk through the press, and we talk in campaigns through 30-second ads, and we try to beat the daylights out of each other. My approach to leadership is bring people together, listen respectfully. Everybody gets heard. Even if you disagree with somebody, you will listen to them. And you may actually do this odd thing, learn something. And I always try to get people to focus on the positive, focus on what the common ground is. Where is there an opportunity to do something? I've been doing that work for years. So I think all of those things, I have lifted myself up out of poverty. It's sort of classic bootstrap story. I'm not the only one in this race that did that, and I'm glad for that. But I think those are the kinds of skills we need in this state right now, people who are self-made. And as I said, I'm funding this campaign. People are shocked that I have the kind of money I have because I've always lived a very simple life. But, you know, we put about $750,000 into this race. Now we'll probably put some more in. And I want to put forward some bold ideas for this state because we are way beyond the time when small ideas are going to help us.
You're listening to a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show on WLOB Radio. I'm your host, Steve Acciullo, and we're speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as an independent candidate for the great state of Maine here in 2018. So, Alan, I think it's fair to say that the Maine economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Job growth has been strong. Unemployment is at 2.7%. Tax revenue is also strong, especially on the business side. And Mainers' consumer confidence is nearing a record high. Why should we change course in what we are doing, and why?
Well, I'm not going to challenge all of that, those statistics, but I will say this. There are two measures of the economy which we should never pay much attention to because they poorly measure how well we're doing. One is the stock market. So if you tell me the stock market's doing great, that does not mean to me that everybody else is. And the other is the unemployment number. Because unemployment is a very interesting data point that only measures people over the last 4 to 6 months. It does not measure 30,000 people who gave up in the state. It doesn't measure the quality of the jobs they have, but how much money they're earning overall. I look at overall household income relative to inflation. I don't see a lot of progress. Look, the Maine economy goes up and down with the national economy. And when it invariably goes up, whoever's in power says, I did it. And when it goes down, that same party says they did it. And it's a little bit of nonsense, really. The question for Maine is, how can we break out of that cycle? How can we create our own waves? And that we're not doing at all. So things might be fun today, you know, and we had this big tax cut out of Washington. We're all kind of on a big sugar high for right now. I mean, if you step back and look at this historically, big tax cut was going to give you 6 months, 12 months, 18 months of what I call a sugar high. Think of it another way. We're living on a credit card. We just added to the federal deficit this month for the first 11 months, $900 billion. It's going to be $1 trillion that, in addition to what we projected before. So we're living on a credit card. We're on a cruise and we're spending our rent money. And it feels great. I feel rich. I'm interested in the long term. Like, what are we putting in place right now for the next down cycle? And I don't want to be pessimistic about it. I'm glad that things are going well. But I think structurally, we haven't changed our economy at all, really. And we have this all across the state, a problem now with jobs that can't be filled. You know, we're aging in place. We're the oldest state. We have been for 4 years in a row. Oldest state in America. We're not producing a generation that has the skills we need. So we've got a lot of work to do. And I'll let the political parties take credit and blame each other for these up and down cycles. My interest is, what are we doing? What's our 10, 20, 30-year vision and plan here? And do we have one? And I think in some areas we don't have one.
Okay, companies must compete today in ways no one thought of years ago. The training and technology skills for today's workforce have affected the way companies do business and what they need to survive and compete. This has created a shortage of tech-skilled workers. You just mentioned that in the marketplace. Yeah. What can you, as governor, or your administration, actually really do about this?
Well, we can do a lot. I mean, the state makes a major contribution to education K-12 statewide, and we make major contributions to community colleges and higher education. There's an awful lot the state can do. I think the governor can convene all of the education silos, get us together, and figure out how we're going to revamp the system. There are two things we need to focus on. One is, what happened to practical education in K-12? Where did it go? When I was a kid, you know, there were 40 friends in my neighborhood. We were the version of our gang, right?
Sure.
And not one of them went to college, other than me. And I got a master's program from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, directly from the ninth grade. So I'm the only kid that ever did that. But that's not a path that most people can follow. These other 40 kids, not one of them went to community college or college, but a lot of them are really successful because they're smart, they have talent, they're motivated. What Maine is, which is entrepreneurial in the best sense of the word, right? Resourceful.
Sure.
So, but what do those kids have that kids don't have now? They had shop and trade skills training in the high school, in every high school. So you auto mechanic, carpenter, electrician, plumber, you name it. Practical skills for kids who weren't going to college. Then we got infected with this idea that everybody should get a 4-year college education. Now, there's a really smart plan for you. It makes no sense. So I want to drive skill training back into K-12. And we can do that by leveraging the money that we give to communities. We can insist upon it. Now, here's another thing that happened when we did that. When you had that kind of training in high school, you weren't asking kids to pay for it. It was free public education. We made a commitment to that as a country. Every kid should have the same opportunity to succeed. Once you take that stuff out of public education, you put it in community colleges, and you say, now pay your own way, you've just cut off a whole segment of the population that, for various reasons, cannot do that. You know, I was a single parent and lived in poverty until I was 30. Even while I was starting my first company, it was taking out $10 a week and, you know, living in an attic. So you can't expect everyone should have to pay to get basic skills. So I think we've got to reinvent what we're doing in K through 12. I have proposed also a bold plan to help people get up to 2 years of higher education in the various forms that they need. So that could be tech training, could be community college, could be college, up to 2 years. We're not going to give it to you, but you can earn it. And here's the deal. The taxpayers of Maine will stand behind a student loan for you. We'll co-sign the note. Student loan for up to 2 years. If you stay and work in Maine after your training or education, every year that you stay and work in Maine, you'll have no loan payment and 10% of your principal will go away. Stay and work in Maine for 10 years, you just got yourself 2 years of free higher education. What I'm trying to do there is extend free education from 12th grade to 14th grade, which matches what we need in the 21st century. Now, people say, oh my gosh, how are we going to pay for that? Well, think about it. If somebody stays and works in Maine, they're putting roots down, they're building a family, they might be building a business, they're helping to build a community. And, oh, incidentally, they're paying income tax, sales tax, excise tax, and property tax. Turns out at the end of the 10 years, it's a pretty good deal for everybody. And we've got, and then people have said, oh my gosh, what if people from outside of the state come in to take advantage? Well, yeah, that's the whole point. That is the whole point, that we want to signal to the country that if you're motivated and you want to improve yourself and you want to be part of building a new economy in Maine, we are here to help you. You got to help yourself. But we will help you, too. So this is a big part of what I'm talking about, an essential part of building the next economy that we need in Maine.
You're listening to a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show on WLOB. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we are speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as an independent candidate for the great state of Maine. Question one, Alan, is a hot-button issue, yep, especially for employers here in the state.
Yep.
The initiative states, do you want to create the Universal Home Care Program to provide home-based assistance to people with disabilities and senior citizens, regardless of income, funded by a new 3.8% tax on individuals and families with Maine wage and adjusted gross incomes above the amount subject to Social Security taxes, which is $128,400 in 2018. Do you support this question, and why, and how do you think it will affect employers and job growth in the state if it passes?
I'm opposed to the question for two reasons. One is I do not like referendums that offer you apple pie and ice cream and somebody else will pay for it. I think it's a dangerous slippery slope we're on with these referendums. And I will not support any referendum structured in that way. If you want to do a referendum on raising taxes, do one. If you want to do a referendum on home health care, do one. But once you tie them together, I think it borders on deceptive. So secondly, I'm not in favor of raising any taxes in Maine. Now, there may be occasions that happen over time and things change we can't anticipate. We might have to do something. One example is in transportation. We have no way to pay for the roads of tomorrow, none, with the explosion of electric cars coming on us. So I might reserve something there. It's not going to come from me, but from a lot of people talking with each other. But as a general rule, we pay a higher percentage of our income for government than anywhere in New England and in any rural state I've ever looked at. We are at a breaking point for taxes. And we got to raise incomes before we talk about raising taxes. And then this whole, now having said that, look, on the national level, we're not getting enough money out of the upper end of the income scale. We are not. And it's going to cost us in infrastructure and lots of other ways in the long term. You know, when Eisenhower was president, the top marginal rate in America was 90% to 96%. And guess what? We built the middle class. We built highways. We had people being able to go to college, vets in particular. People could buy homes. Now that the number is a third of that, and it's been a heyday for some people, but not for most middle-class people in America. So I think if we're going to raise taxes on the rich, it's got to be done nationally, because if you do it one state at a time, you've just tilted the playing field against yourself. We can't compete in Maine if we're going to keep raising taxes, particularly on the wealthy.
The voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase its minimum wage every year for the next few years and then index it after that. It's currently $10 an hour. Some people say it should be higher. Some people say it should be as high as $15 or $20 an hour. What's your position on the minimum wage, and how do you see your new administration dealing with the statewide if elected?
I think we made a mistake, we, the business community and elsewhere, in opposing incremental increases in the minimum wage by not indexing it to inflation. I'm in favor of the minimum wage having the same value today that it had when it was enacted. And because we haven't indexed it, the real value of it has decreased. Now, a lot of my friends in the business community, they say, woohoo, that's more for us and less for them. I think that's a mistake in the long term. And you know, we've got people working hard and still having to get public assistance. So you can't complain about the public assistance and cut off the increases in minimum wage over time. So I think we've made a mistake there. I'm in favor of increasing the minimum wage to the level that it was when it was created, which I don't have that dollar number off the top of my head. But, and you know, it's, now you have to catch up, and there's a shock effect. I get it. And it's not easy for everybody, but we have to adjust to a better minimum wage.
We have cities and towns, as a follow-up to that question, that have decided to look into their own minimum wage. Portland, for example, and other state towns have challenged that they can raise their minimum wage even higher than the state level. What do you think about this? Do you support each city or town throughout the whole state having their own minimum wage system, or should the state step in and rein that issue in and get control so that there's one minimum wage throughout the whole state?
Yeah, look, the cost of living changes all across the state. And I was in Fort Kent last week. I was in Machias yesterday. You don't need the same amount of money in those towns as you need to exist in Portland. So as a general rule, I'd like to see it be uniform. I think it's easier for business to operate that. I think the number of towns that could actually raise their minimum wage above the state level may be limited to one, which is Portland. I mean, Portland is such a unique place. It's a small physical space loaded with businesses. People can't even afford to live there anymore. I mean, they can do all kinds of stuff that the rest of us wouldn't even imagine doing. So I'm not sure I'd want to have the state impose upon what they do, because I don't think it's a problem that can spread very much. If it did spread and it creates this patchwork of different wage levels town by town, then I think we might have to take it on.
One other follow-up question. You talked about referendums and the citizen referendums we find are traditionally in or started here in Portland and then go out through the whole state. Do you think that the referendum system in regards to signing up for referendum should be equally amongst all the different counties rather than having signatures from every county or a percentage of signatures? Or should it still be maybe that Portland dictates whatever referendums goes on the state?
Yeah. I have three different problems with referendums, and I'll start by saying I think we need them. They're part of the Constitution. I have run referendums, and they are an important way for to put a check on government or to introduce ideas that a government can't take up or won't take up. So having said that, we got problems, and we've had problems for a while in referendums. One of them is the geographic issue. I'm in favor of at least having to do by congressional district, half and half. Whether you go to county, that's a different thing. But we got to have some distribution. The second thing is we've got a money problem with referendums. Most of these referendums now are part of a national agenda. Right now, it's a national agenda on the left. 10 years ago, it was a national agenda on the right. And it's always greatly amusing to me when I hear conservatives say, operating by referendum is just a terrible idea. I can't believe it. And you ask them, like, what were you doing 10 years ago? Weren't you doing those tax cut referendums? Oh, yeah. And then you ask the governor, didn't you say 2 years ago you were going to govern by referendum because you couldn't get the legislature to do what you want? I mean, let's not be hypocritical about this stuff. It's a general problem, I think, when the left and the right start to manipulate referendums to advance their agenda. And so the third problem is this national money coming in here. Now, if there's any way in the world we can limit the national money, I'd like to see referendums be what they were designed to be. It's expressions of Maine people who have a concern or redress of government, not national organizations trying to manipulate this small state to advance their agendas.
You're listening to a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show on WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Hi, this is Derek Volk, host of The Derek Volk Show. I want to tell you about my book, Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. My book is a rare and emotionally truthful story of my experiences as a father raising a son on the autism spectrum. When Dylan was 2 years old, my wife sat me down and said, "Something's not quite right with Dylan." My book takes you from birth to that day at age two until he was diagnosed with autism 6 years later, and then through his extremely rocky middle school years, his volatile high school life, and his challenging path to adulthood. The story has been called extremely raw and shockingly honest, and has been given 5 stars by every review on Amazon. Please go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, to learn more about our story. That's chasingtherabbit.org.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we are doing a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show, and I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and we're speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as an independent candidate for the state of Maine. We're doing a series. This is the first of four of all the gubernatorial candidates. We've already gone through the first six formal questions. We're going into number seven. Alan, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, that's good.
Give me the tough ones.
All right. Well, this one is a serious one.
Yeah.
And it is becoming a tough issue. And that's the opioid epidemic crisis that's affecting employees, employers, productivity, work production, and everything is being affected in the state, and it's getting worse by the day. How will your administration deal with this crisis and assist in the opioid epidemic?
Yeah, let me tell you what I believe about this crisis that is not talked about enough, and it's true of other crises that we're confronting. When you have an economy that doesn't provide enough opportunity to people, bad things happen. This is why, again, I'm always going to answer first that we have to find a way to grow opportunity in this economy. Otherwise, you're always dealing with symptoms. And if we keep throwing money just at symptoms, we're never going to get out of the spiral. Having said that, the opioid crisis, I've lost one nephew to this crisis.
Sorry to hear that.
I also lost one to suicide and one to murder. So they're all expressions of hopelessness and a sense that there is an opportunity. This is a perfect example of the breakdown that partisanship is driving in government right now. One side says, and they're half right, we need more enforcement. We've got to crack down on the dealers, and we've got to... Yep. And the other side says, no, we need more services. We've got to help people who are in the middle, in the throes of this disease. And they literally could not find common ground. Now, you can blame leaders all across the spectrum for that, but that is what happened. And while that was happening, people were dying. So I look at it as an issue of a style of leadership that is capable of bringing people into the office on both sides of the aisle and knocking some heads. And I mean that affectionately. But we have a crisis. Everybody's got an idea. You can't get just only what you want and make sure the other guys never get what they want. So let's employ some common sense here, and let's bring people together and get things done. I am happy to report, you probably know this, that this week the United States Senate voted 99-1 on a major funding package to help states combat the opioid crisis. 99-1. Why could they do that in Washington, where they can't agree on the time of day, but we could not do it in Augusta? It's a very serious question for us. We should have had votes of 99-1. And why didn't we? Everybody talks about it. Again, I think we get stuck in this partisan thing. I want to win, and I want you to lose. And I would say, and I'm saying it everywhere, the greatest skill of political parties right now is, and where they put most of their energy, and most of their money is in destroying their opponents, but most of their energy is in making sure the other party never gets anything done. And they are highly skilled at this. I mean, they've raised it to an art form, and nothing's getting done. So we got to break that logjam. I think we can do it with an independent. I don't think we can do it with a party candidate. You know, they'll be out there for the next 5 or 6 weeks beating the daylights out of each other on TV, demonizing each other. This is a horrible person. This is terrible. Everything will be black and white and grainy and eerie music. And then they'll all come on this show and they'll say, once I'm elected, I'm going to reach out to the other party and I'm going to bring people together. No, you are not. And there's no evidence of that happening. So I think an independent has a shot at doing that, and particularly an independent like me who's been doing it for decades. So it's one thing to say you're going to do that. It's another thing to point to dates and times and places where you actually have done it. That's what I'm offering to the people of Maine.
The state has passed recreational marijuana, and there's been a lot of wrangling over the regulations and details of how it's going to be rolled out, as you know. Employers, to be honest with you, if you talk to them, aren't 100% sure what they can do, what they can't do in regards to the law. Currently, for example, there's a difference in how you can treat employees or discipline them when regards to alcohol versus marijuana. Doesn't seem fair. What is your position on this issue, and how do you plan to deal with this as governor?
Well, let me start with the big picture. I grew up in the 60s, and so that has shaped my attitude about marijuana. Not that I ever, well, I did inhale, let's be truthful, but I just feel in general that we have spent so much energy on this issue, on criminalizing marijuana and sending people to jail for possession of small amounts of marijuana in the 70s and the 80s, even the 90s, that I'm grateful that we're moving to not criminalizing this. And we got a big problem with the federal law. It doesn't happen to agree with us. And having said that, there are a wide array of challenges in moving to legalization that we never thought about before because we never imagined it would be legalized. It was always like going to be forever more, it would be illegal. So that's one of them. Driving is another one. How do you keep this stuff from being marketed to kids? You know, I said at a forum last week, this is the greatest concern to me. Stop putting this stuff in candy. Coca-Cola announced they're looking into a cannabis soda. Well, you know, that's the slippery slope to me. And how do towns deal with it? What are towns supposed to do? They're all flailing right now, trying to figure out how do we regulate? Where does it go? How do we get money out of it? So it's a very, very complicated issue. I'm glad that we've all taken a bunch of time to figure this out. I'm not opposed to going slow here and doing it right. And if it takes more time, it takes more time. But we'll be a decade figuring all of this out easily.
You're listening to a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show on WLLB Radio. I'm your host, David Shulo, and we're speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as independent candidate for the great state of Maine. Okay, Alan, we got another question for you. You ready?
I think so. I hope so.
Okay, I hope so too. One of the issues that employers say is a huge concern and a major factor in hiring is the uncertainty of when it comes to the cost of health care. Costs are going up, and I've been told that premiums are going up again double digit this year. How do we get a grip on the rising costs that affects employers and employees, and what's your administration's plan on this issue?
Well, let me just give you my general attitude on healthcare, if that's okay, and then I'll go to the specific. We are the richest society in human history, and we have been having a debate for 50 years over whether 10 million, 20 million, 50 million, 100 million people should be without healthcare. I think everyone in this country ought to have adequate healthcare. I deeply regret that this has become such a partisan issue. You know, for a while, Republicans were leading the charge in health care, and then Democrats leading the charge, and they both were opposing each other while they were doing it. The only reason we don't have health care is not because we don't have the resources. It's because we don't have the will, and we have the wrong priorities. We will, in a blink of an eye, put another far-flung base in some remote corner of the world or build another redundant system. But we don't have enough money for health care. So I say that it's an economic, fiscal, and moral position. So on the specific question, on the cost, I think the most useful thing we can do at the state level, and it will be a horrendous battle, is to get more transparency into the price. People have to be able to shop for the best value, as they do with everything else. And you'll never be able to do that unless you have transparency. And the industry has fought it for decades, and they'll fight it until the end. There's a reason why they're fighting it. You can get the same procedure within 20 miles at sometimes a third, a quarter of the price. Now, here's the other thing I'd like to do. If we had transparency and people could shop, I'd like to reward them for taking a lower-cost alternative. So if you would have to have a procedure that costs $20,000 in one place and $10,000 in the other, and they're of equal quality, and you take the – right now you have no incentive, zero. Why would you care? I mean, you have the same amount that you have to put in either case. You don't really care. So we have to build incentives into that system. So here's what I'd like to do. You take the $10,000 alternative, we ought to kick back 10 or 20% of the savings to you. Make an incentive for you to shop. And I think that could help. There's no magic wand in this problem, but I think it could help a lot. So transparency and incentives. And be prepared to fight the big guys out of Washington with all the three-piece suits. That's okay. You know, we'll fight if we have to. We'd rather, you know, get along and collaborate wherever and whenever we can. But sometimes people aren't interested in that because they're making a ton of money and they like to keep doing it. Thank you very much. So I will take on the medical care operations, particularly the national ones. And let's try to do something in Maine that we haven't done before and other states haven't done enough of. Maybe set the example.
Just a quick follow-up yes or no question. Do you support universal health care?
I do, yes. Okay. Now, how we get there is another matter. We're not going to do it at a state level. That's impossible. I mean, okay. That's a national issue. That's not a yes or no answer. But
no, that's all right. I wouldn't have expected a true yes or no answer. Come on now.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. There are many laws in other states that are being proposed or being touted to be proposed here in Maine that affect employers. I got a couple of them, and I just want your thoughts on it. First one is equal pay law. Equal pay law prohibits employers from paying a lower rate than paid to employees of a different gender that are comparable for work or any other
rate. I'm in favor of that.
Party. You are in favor of that law.
I'm in favor of equal pay, yes.
Okay. Second, mandatory paid sick law.
I have to think about that one a little more. I'm very concerned that we apply regulations to small and large businesses in exactly the same way, and I want to stop that. I want to begin to think through. When you're imposing on Bath Ironworks is one thing, but to impose on a shop with three employees, that's another thing. And a lot of my interest is in the little guys and the small businesses. I want to see more of it. So I want to take a hard look at that one.
How about the salary history law that prohibits employers from screening applicants based on pay history, doesn't allow applicants to be asked about compensation history for either current or former employers?
Is that a law on the books now or being proposed?
No, this is being proposed. It's a law in Massachusetts, and it's coming possibly to Maine.
I'm not generally in favor of that.
Okay. No. How about criminal background check law, banning the box for criminal history being asked about on the application? It permits criminal history only after conditional offer of employment. It requires an individual's assessments or written notice if an applicant is disqualified.
You know, I don't know the details of that. I'd like to see something like that after a certain period of time. I think if somebody got on the wrong side of the law and made a mistake as a kid or something, they shouldn't have that trailing them for 75 years. So there ought to be some reasonable time we could agree upon, 10 years, 20 years, I don't know what it is, in which, you know, we're going to let people move on with their lives. Now, you know, so... I feel that's really important. Now, I don't know how much of a problem it is because we got a lot of employers out there desperate for employees right now, and we're talking about a way to screen out employees, and maybe we got to rethink some of this stuff.
You're listening to a special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show on WLOB. I am your host, David Chulo. We're speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as an independent candidate in the great state of Maine. All right, Alan, here we go.
I'm ready.
Next question. You mentioned it earlier a little bit, but I want to get a little bit more detailed in the infrastructure issue here in the state of Maine. Certainly, we have roads, bridges, general physical infrastructure that are in need of repair, which, of course, takes money. There's also the infrastructure for cell phones and broadband, which is just as big an issue here in the state.
Yeah.
What can government really do in that role? I mean, look, I get on 95 and I drop a call right here in downtown Portland. Mm. What can government really do to fix that issue?
I'm not sure what government can or should do in the concentrated urban areas. I mean, that's a different set of problems that's almost entirely covered by the private sector. You know, we got to use the marketplace to force those carriers to do better. I think the real problem is in the rural areas where the market is not delivering the service because there's not enough density. And there... I think there's an important public role. You know, every generation of Americans has built the infrastructure we needed at that time to expand and grow the economy. Every generation, and whether it was canals or railroads or roads or electrification, telephones, we always found a way to do it. Sometimes we did it with the private sector and giving them land or opportunities, and sometimes we did it with regulated monopolies and electricity. This one is a different one. We don't have a regulated monopoly. You can't go to the cell companies and say, we're going to attach a 2% fee and we're going to use that to build the system out. That's what we did with telephones, universal service fees. Can't do that because these industries aren't regulated. So we're going to have to find another mechanism. I think if And I think it's critical to the growth of Maine's economy over time.
Especially in the northern part.
Especially in the northern part. But look, we're moving into an economy where more and more people can live in one place and work in another place. If they have good internet service and they have an airport within 50 miles. We have them all over the state right now. People are working in New York, they're working in California, they're working in Tokyo, they're living in Maine. So this is a new world we're living in, and we're going to have more of it. We can repopulate large parts of rural Maine over time if we build good broadband out to those locations. So, look, I will propose to the people of Maine a major bond issue, probably $100 million, every 4 years. So if I serve two terms, there'll be two of them. And that will just keep building the system out and out. One of the things we have to do is make sure we don't get tied up in yesterday's technology. We have all these purists that say, oh, it's got to be this or it's got to be that. No. Let's be as smart as we can. Let's use the best technology available. If you live on a mountain in Casco, it may be that building a cell tower is the best way to get you service at the end of the fiber line. We don't have to take fiber to every single house in Maine. So I'm in favor of that. On the transportation thing, and I think Maine people, if you make the case to them, this is an investment in our future, they will say yes. On the transportation thing, we have a huge crisis brewing. Every manufacturer of automobiles in the world is retooling for electric cars right now. And the percentage of electric cars is going to double and triple many times over the next 15 years. And those cars are not going to use the gasoline, so they're not going to pay the gas tax. And everybody wants lower taxes. So, our road system is going to disintegrate if we don't fix this problem. And again, it gets locked up in partisan stuff. One side says, hey, maybe we should have user fees. Maybe we should, no new taxes. I'm going to fight you. I'm going to run ads against you in the next election. There was a referendum in Massachusetts 4 years ago on raising the gas tax one penny. And the voters turned it down. So everybody wants to get something for nothing. I get it. We all want lower taxes, but we want the roads to work. At some point, the rubber's got to meet the road, as they say, and we're going to have to confront it as a state, and it'll be hard. But you either want good roads or you don't. And we're on the road to having no good roads.
Let's discuss quickly the issue of taxes. You've mentioned a couple times, and you've come out and said basically you are opposing any additional taxes. Is that employer taxes and income taxes?
I think the greater concern for me is income taxes, because I think they're very high in Maine, and I do believe that we're losing people, and there are people who contribute to communities and contribute to the health of Maine, and I think also it makes it hard for us to compete, and it makes it harder for people to start businesses. I want to see us have 1,000 new small businesses every year. In order for that to happen, you can't be taxing people on their income at the rate we're doing it. People won't come here, or they won't stay here. And anybody who's been in the business community has heard this and seen this 100 times. So over time, I hope and believe we can lower the income tax level to make us more competitive. I don't say that because I'm angry at government or I hate government. I think part of the problem is we've got one party that hates government. We got the other party that loves government. I want to be somewhere in between. I just want it to work better and be more efficient. Again, that's the book I wrote in 2010. It's all about how to make this government a 21st century government that works as well as it can and does more with less, and even will be smaller over time. That's what we need to do. Then we can bring income taxes down.
Final question, and it's a general question. This is your time to talk. Why should business leaders, HR professionals, vote for you as governor of the state of Maine?
Well, I think what we have been missing in Maine for a while is two things. One is a leader who's comfortable with the future, who has really studied these issues, and who has a positive and hopeful and optimistic view of Maine. I think we've been beating ourselves up terribly for a while, and it hurts. We've been sending the wrong signals to the country. Think of what we've been saying to the country. Maine is stupid. Maine is corrupt. Teachers are a dime a dozen. We cannot do this and be dependent as we are on tourism and be desperate for new talent and new people. So one thing, every candidate will make a lot of promises. There's one I can promise and I guarantee will be delivered. The tone will change on day one. I will be promoting Maine, not only as a great place, not only with great people, but a place that makes great things, that we're going to stamp with the Maine brand and we're going to send them all over the country. So if you think that what we've been doing is pretty good, by the way, the Labor Department a few weeks ago said in the next 8 years we're going to create 100 jobs. If you're satisfied with that, then you should vote for one of these two political parties and we'll just keep doing it. And if you instead would want to make some real change, you can't get changed by doing the same thing over and over. Let's do something different. I represent somebody who can help us move, and I hope I'll get your vote.
Thank you very much, Alan, for being on our show
today. My pleasure. A lot of fun.
This concludes today's special edition of the HR Power Hour radio show. I, your host, David Chulo, have had the pleasure of speaking with Alan Caron, who is running for governor as independent candidate for the great state of Maine. His website is caronforgovernor.com. As a reminder, this is the first of our four-part gubernatorial interview series here in October 2018. Please listen next week for the second gubernatorial candidate in our series. As always, go to hrpowerhour.com after the show to hear it again or connect with the guest or host. Thank you for listening. And now your HR tip of the week. Your HR tip of the week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tani Alvarez at Veral Dana. Does your company have an internal investigation policy? I'm not talking about a policy that is included in your employee handbook, but an internal investigative policy that directs the investigator as to the proper steps to take in conducting an investigation. Consistency is key in having a policy that directs the investigator as to what steps to take when will be of value should you ever find yourself litigating the steps you took in one case versus another. The policy should include the steps that should be taken after a complaint is received. These steps may include a written complaint, may require signatures for accuracy after statements are obtained, but most importantly, will direct the investigator so that there is consistency between investigations. Contact a member of Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Practice Group to discuss more.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.